Blog Talk Radio.
No.
Of the Pack Podcast. Experience
the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Victory Monday, my favorite kind of show. Pulse of the Pack here after a thrilling 17-9 victory by the Green Bay Packers over the Seattle Seahawks. They start their season 1-0 with a big win over the two teams that, while at the beginning of this, beginning of our season, which is now, Jason and I both believe that those would be the two teams battling for the top seed in the NFC. So the Packers now, while there are 15 games to go, it is nice to look ahead a little bit. Aaron Rodgers said it himself. These are the wins that you are grateful for in December and January. Hopefully, the Packers can make it matter. But we'll talk about the first one because the first one is very sweet. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf. I am here in it was actually kind of a fall day as opposed to, late summer, which is what we're in now, here in Rockford, Illinois. And joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, how'd you like that game yesterday?
I'm gonna quote the famous Kirk Cousins and say, you like that, but I like that. Of course, Victory Monday. It's a fantastic day, although it's a little bittersweet. We're recording this on Monday, September the 11th, so that's obviously weighing heavily on my mind, and I know we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but I want to urge everybody, if you have not, to maybe go check out the timeline of Ari Fleischer, who is a, I don't recall what his official title was at the time, but he spent most of the day today recounting what was going on in the timeline that had actually happened on that day, and there's some information and some stuff in there that I'd never heard before. So, but back to football, very exciting to get a Packers win. This is one, obviously, that as early as it is, you don't ever like to think that week one is going to make or break your season, but it certainly could, and, man, we got some cool stuff to talk about. I am excited to be back in the regular season mode of Pulse, so let's get at it, man.
Let's get at it indeed, and let's start with the game itself, obviously. The Packers won, and how they got there was interesting, to say the very least. The offense, we had a couple surprise – well, not really a surprise, I guess, but the inactives list came out and Brian Bulaga was on it. Brian Bulaga did not play. Kyle Murphy started at right tackle. And then the other kind of surprise, I guess the surprise, was that Aaron Jones was inactive and Devontae Mays was active, when it looked like in preseason and training camp reports and all that sort of stuff that Jones was the guy who was kind of separating himself from the rest of the rookie running backs. It's clear that's not the case now. Obviously things can change from week to week. Maybe it was a matchup thing. I don't know. We never will. But Jason, were you surprised a little bit, at least, that Jones was down and Mays was up, or just maybe not even that Mays was up, but that Jones was just down in general.
It was a little surprising to me, but because neither of these guys had taken a regular season snap, I guess the Packers know more than we do, and it's one of those things where this is one of the reasons why we say when things happen in preseason and guys stand out, it's okay to be encouraged, but maybe not go overboard, because then you see things like this happen and things can change quickly, and you know, maybe there's a matchup thing going on there, or maybe there is a shift on the depth chart. I'm not sure, but either way, Packers got to win. So, you know, whatever happened or whatever it was, it seemed to work out, although I don't think Mays took any snaps at running back. I don't know if he got any on special teams.
No, it was the Ty Montgomery and Jamal Williams show as far as running back goes. And let's start with kind of the first half. It was really, I mean, they didn't score any points, so you can kind of gather what kind of half it was from that. Except for it wasn't as, I don't know if it was so much a dominant performance by the Seahawks, and they certainly made some plays. Let's not sugarcoat that. But, you know, the Packers would move the ball between the 40s. I made the joke with one of the guys I was watching the game with at halftime that, you know, if the end zone was at one of the 40-yard lines, Packers would be up by 40 points by now. They absolutely dominated the first half from a defensive standpoint. And we're moving the ball, they just couldn't finish drives, whether it was a sack that killed the drive or penalties or something like that. They didn't put the ball in the end zone. They were unable to kick field goals. You know, the Packers' offense just a little out of sync to start. And then the second half began, and it was pretty similar for at least the beginning until a game-changing play on defense by Mike Daniels. The offense, though, here, they scored two touchdowns. One of them was off that turnover, and one of them was off of a patented Aaron Rodgers 12 men on the field forces the free play, and Jordy Nelson streaks down the middle of the field and scores a touchdown. So, Jason, I say all that stuff to say, do you have any concern that the Packers had two, I don't want to call them gifts because every point in the NFL, especially against that defense, is going to be earned. But do you have any concern that the Packers scored two touchdowns and really none of them were on normal, quote-unquote, plays?
Well, I would say the first touchdown was normal. It just happened to come after a turnover, which is something that Seattle obviously didn't want to happen. So the second one, yeah, the free play. I mean, that's just what the Packers do. And in a week one game, you know, I've talked about week one being a little different in terms of teams not being in their full stride, and you've got a lot of new faces on both sides of the ball for the Packers, so I think they're also trying to integrate some of those guys and get used to that. I think Aaron Rodgers has on his mind that Jari Evans is new to the offense, Kyle Murphy's out there, it's not Bulaga, just things like that. And I'm not going to take anything away from Seattle's defense, because until further notice, they're still one of the best, if not the best, defenses in the NFL, and they've got enough experience in Pro Bowlers on that side of the ball that whether they're rusty or not, they can play some ball. So all in all, it wasn't that surprising from the standpoint of what you expect against an offense to do against a defense like that. I'm just glad the Packers defense showed up big, if not even a little bigger, and helped kind of seal the deal.
Yeah, and something that is pretty, I don't know if it's common knowledge or it's always said or, you know, whatever you want to call it, good defenses are always ahead of offenses at this time of year. Their legs are fresh. And with the way that teams don't play in the preseason anymore, the first couple weeks of the season are always a little wonky just because of the way that teams have, you know, they got to get their legs under them, so to speak. And I'm not suggesting that the Packers should change their approach to the preseason, because most teams do the same thing. It's just that's how the NFL works now. You know, you have teams don't want to lose their players in meaningless games. For example, you know, Odell Beckham did not play last night against the Dallas Cowboys because he got hurt in the preseason. And that's just how it is. So good defenses are ahead of offenses at this point of the year is what I say all that to say. I'm not concerned about the Packers offense just yet because I think that, you know, they have a lot of weapons, and I think that it's going to take some time to feel some things out. And this offense, let's face it too, it's notorious for starting slow really ever since, you know, that 2011 season they opened up and they scored like a million points against the Saints. But ever since then, they kind of started slow. You know, sometimes it takes only 3 weeks. Sometimes it takes a couple, just a couple games. Sometimes it takes, like last year, the offense didn't seem to hit its stride until the run the table stretch. Hopefully this year that won't be the case. But I'm not concerned, not yet at least. And the other reality, too, is, even when the Packers offense is at its absolute best, all firing on all cylinders, they're missing their starting tackle against a team that has probably the best front four in football. And as you said, Jason, the best defense in football. The Packers did about as well as they could. Well, not as well as they could, but they did enough yesterday to win the game. And sometimes, you know, they're going to score enough on schedule, quote unquote, to where, you know, a couple of those gimmicky kind of, you know, free play kind of things or points off a turnover, that's a good thing to see. So no concern for me because their last, you know, McCarthy said today that they had four possessions in the second half, touchdown, touchdown, field goal, and then they ran out the clock. And they had they not had to run out the clock, they may have scored on that possession as well. So that's how I judge that. The other guy, the two best players on the Packers offense yesterday were a running back and a wide receiver. And I'm going to start with the running back and wide receiver, if you catch my drift there. Ty Montgomery, the stat line is not going to be sexy. He didn't have 100 yards rushing. He didn't have those gash runs. But you did get a glimpse in the second half of just how effective this guy can be as both a running back and a receiver out of the backfield. There's a vine going around on Twitter right now where he just lays waste to Earl Thomas. And for all the people that said Ty was not able to handle the pounding that a running back could take, that is a big, big dude. And I can promise you that. He has defenders just bounce off of him. He was very stout, and I think you have to be encouraged on what you saw yesterday from the Packers running back. Maybe not, like I said, not the greatest stat line. He's not going to average 6 yards a carry yesterday. But he did enough. You know, he kept the Packers ahead of schedule against that defense for the most part. And he was a weapon out of the backfield. Jason, you got to be encouraged with what you saw from this guy, don't you?
I was very, very encouraged. You know, Ty Montgomery's not a running back. He doesn't have the build for it. And I think the problem is people get sucked into the narrative of, well, he was a receiver, so they're converting him, and therefore he can't be – he's out of position. He's not playing his natural position. Well, you know, Ty Montgomery's the one that lobbied for this change, and he is very much built to be a running back. He dragged three or four guys into the end zone for that first touchdown. You know, and maybe you're right, Jacob. Maybe it wasn't a normal play because Ty Montgomery's not a normal player. He is a very dynamic X-factor to this offense, and I think once they get their – rhythm down and we get into midseason, I think you're going to see exactly what people have been talking about, which is Montgomery is going to create matchup problems for a defense. You get him in space. They started kind of getting the ball in his hands and letting him work through and do what he does. And not only is he shifty, he's not overly fast, but he also runs hard. Like you said, you know, he doesn't just run out of bounds every time. He'll lower his shoulder and lay a hit if he needs to. Set the tone. I mean, I love Montgomery. You know, his stats, like you said, they weren't flashy yesterday, but the way I described it, I did game balls and lame calls, and it went up this morning, and she said TV. Montgomery got a game ball because to me it was quality over quantity. It wasn't about the number of yards. And sure, you can say, well, the only reason he got 19 touches is because the Packers had the ball for 40 freaking minutes of the game. But he was a huge reason why this team won. I mean, I would say, you know, obviously Aaron Rodgers throws the ball and touches it on every down, but without Ty Montgomery, I don't know what that offense would have been. I'm very encouraged by what he's gonna offer, and as the rest of these pieces all come into play. Didn't really see him in pass pro, so I'm not sure how effective he was there, but I'd rather have him on my side than not, I can tell you that.
Absolutely. And the other guy who had a really good game yesterday, was the team's leading receiver, was that dude that the Packers should have cut the last two off seasons, and I say that in jest. That was Randall Cobb. Cobb was the Packers' most effective pass catcher yesterday. You could tell, for all this talk about the two tight ends and all that stuff that they're able to do, the Packers really ran their three wide receiver, one tight end set, not exclusively, but that was their primary offense yesterday. And that's the nice part about the versatility they have with the players on their team, is that they can play three wide, and I really think that is the best way to attack the Seahawks. You can't play too tight, because I don't think you'll be able to even dream of running the ball. And the Seahawks play so well in congested areas because they're so fast. I think you have to spread them out. But Cobb was phenomenal yesterday. He looked like his old self, and he could have had a couple more catches, but Rodgers just flat missed him on a couple throws, one on a corner route and one on a small out route. And the Packers, you know, this is a guy who has done a lot of good things for them since he was drafted. And I think that, you know, in 2015, everybody looked at him to kind of step up and take the reins from Jordy Nelson, as Jordy was down for the year, and he didn't do that. And I think a lot of people have like this poor taste in their mouth from that. The reality is his money, this number comes from Ross Uglum, is 6% of the salary cap. That's not a big deal at all. He's a good player. It's not like the Packers are hurting for salary cap. And yesterday he showed you that he can still be a really good player. The reality on a few things is there's so many targets that, yes, Jordy's going to lead the team in, you know, touchdowns and maybe receiving, and Devontae is going to do some things, and Martellus Bennett's going to get some targets, and there's Geronimo Allison, and when he comes back, and the reality is Randall Cobb can still play. He didn't become a bad player. I say all that, Jason, to say, can we finally put to bed the Packers don't need him and need to cut him garbage argument?
Yeah, it's time for that to go. Cobb got a game ball, game high in catches and receiving yards. So, tell you what, regardless of what you think, what I think, what anybody else thinks, Aaron Rodgers likes Randall Cobb. I think it's pretty obvious that he trusts Randall Cobb more than he trusts some other guys so far in this offense. So, you might as well settle in and just accept 18 as a part of this offense. And you know what? I'm okay with that. I'm actually pretty glad that Randall Cobb is in the mix. Talking about his contract, I don't think the issue should be about what he's getting paid right now. He's fine. He's right in line with what receivers should be making. Now, when he signed the deal, was he maybe a little bit on the higher end of the scale? Sure. Things have adjusted a couple of years since he signed that extension, and he's coming up due again. I think it's more going to be about what he would ask for in his next deal, and that's a completely different story. But right now, and the way that offenses are designed, Randall Cobb is a huge asset in the middle and underneath to try to draw defenders away and open up things for Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams. You got Geronimo Allison coming back into the mix. And, oh, by the way, don't forget Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks, two tight end sets. And then you got Ty Montgomery in the backfield. I mean, that is I'm going to use a cliche term here, but that is kind of they're all running on all cylinders. That's a murderer's row of offensive weapons. I don't want to have to be the defensive coordinator who's trying to solve that. And, oh, also, Richard Sherman is shadowing Randall Cobb. Richard Sherman is still a very good cornerback, so that to me says that Randall Cobb is still a thing.
He absolutely is. And, you know, the reality of it is the Packers, like I said, they're not hurting for the cap space, and Cobb can still play. I think we saw this wasn't even – something that we just saw, you know, yesterday. It was playoffs. Cobb was one of their, if not their best pass catcher, one of their best pass catchers. He was great against the Giants, even if you take away the Hail Mary. He's got two touchdowns against the Giants. He was awesome against the Cowboys. And, you know, the whole thing against the Falcons, that nobody really did anything that day. So I don't understand why it's almost like everybody's like, oh, if I say that they need to cut a player that's like name brand and good, that makes me look smart. And the reality is just that Cobb's still a good player. He's still a useful player. Jason, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers trusts him. He's one of his really good friends, and that doesn't matter if he's not a good player, but he is. I'm tired of that argument. I've been tired of that argument. I am absolutely okay with Randall Cobb sticking around in Green Bay for now and maybe the foreseeable future. I don't know, you know, what the future holds. But I don't want to talk about the future when we're in the middle of the present, too. It's like, it's almost like, you know, you go into these games and everybody wants to look ahead while it's like the games are going on right now. You know, you've got some people talking about, you know, who should the Packers target in the draft next year or something like that. And believe me, I love the draft. But the reason I love the draft is because of actual games. You know, the draft doesn't matter if they don't play. And I don't really care about the future and who's going to be on the team in 2019 because the Packers are trying to win a Super Bowl here in 2017. So leave Randall Cobb alone. Stop talking about how he's not that useful and he doesn't need to be here anymore. Is he a number one receiver? No. But does that really matter now that the Packers do have their number one receiver back? And you guys, some guys act like it's like their money in the cap space. If they're hurting for cap space, sure, something that would need to be revisited. But they're not hurting for cap space, so let it go. There is my rant on Randall Cobb for the evening. The final thing I want to talk about as far as the offense goes before we move to the real story of the game is Martellus Bennett. And I've gushed over this guy all offseason, probably more than anyone not named Marcus Ebersol, because Marcus really likes him. And it's because he's an interesting guy and says a lot of things. The late in the game, Aaron Rodgers runs for a first down and gets hit by a couple guys as he dives head first. Well, Martellus Bennett defends his quarterback and shoves the player down. He gets a 15-yard penalty in the process. Some people love it. Some people call him a bonehead. Jason, I want to know, what side of things are you on?
Well, if you follow me on Twitter, I wasn't happy about it when it first happened. I tweeted out something not so nice about the whole situation because of the cost of the situation. I can appreciate what Bennett was trying to do. And in hindsight now, the Packers won the game. It didn't cost them. So obviously I'm going to shift over to the side of, hey, I'm glad that he stood up for his quarterback. And I think in the long run, that's going to actually go a lot further from a support standpoint and a bonding and just you know, a show of support for his teammate. Those are the types of things that other teammates take to, look favorably upon, and it's contagious. So, you know, I'm okay with it now 24 hours later. I would worry about Bennett, who is a very colorful personality, maybe losing his composure at a more critical point in a different type of game. And he might mean well, but that could end up being a costly thing. There were a couple penalties that happened yesterday where the Packers were kind of right on that edge of field goal range, and you take yourself out of scoring range, and all of a sudden that's costing points on the scoreboard. It's not something you ever want to see, but, you know, again, the reality is what it is, and so I'm going to just go with it was good to see, and I'm more okay with it than not, and the 75,000 people in the stands, I think, seem to agree with me if you heard their reaction, so all's good with that.
Here's kind of it's a weird situation because the Packers, the only thing they needed was another first down regardless of what Bennett did on that play. So it's not like he cost them big points or something like that. Here's my thing. I know it's an NFL culture thing and you're to defend your guy and, you know, that's Aaron Rodgers, that's the franchise quarterback, and that's why I don't completely hate it, but here's kind of my thing is I liken it to not quite the same thing, but the, you know, the culture of beanball in baseball. You know, you hit one of our guys, we got to plunk one of yours. And like me, I'm sitting here as a fan going like, you just gave him a free freaking base runner. Like that's a guy that can score a run. It makes a solo homer, a two run homer, for example. Here's something where I always argue in the baseball sense, there's other ways to protect players than throwing a ball at him. There's another way, I think, to protect Aaron Rodgers than to shove that guy. But if Rodgers likes it and the team likes it, then who am I to say otherwise? Ultimately, it didn't cost the Packers the game. It didn't cost them any points because on the very next play, or not the very next play, excuse me, on a second down play, Martellus Bennett caught a pass for a first down that iced the game. So that's the offensive side of things. I don't love it, but I can learn to love it if they do. You know, not a huge deal. Defense was the story of this game. I have a moment of appreciation for Mike Daniels here. I have been in his corner for a very long time. I think that he is a phenomenal defensive player. I said last week on the show that he maybe doesn't belong in the same sentence as like Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt, but he is right below that. And yesterday, he took the game absolutely over. He was phenomenal in the first half. And as I mentioned, the game-changing play came in the second half where Daniels beats his guy, he throws him aside, and strips Russell Wilson, and Kyler Fackrell is right there, right place, right time to recover a fumble that gives the Packers their first points of the game and a lead that they would never relinquish. But, Jason, we talked about this a lot as we were worried about the pass rush all offseason, and I still believe rightfully so, but something we didn't consider was that the lack of depth in edge rushers was going to give Daniels more chances to rush the passer. And yesterday, at least for the time being, that paid some dividends because Daniels, like I said, 1.5 sacks, 2.5 tackles for loss, 4 quarterback hits. He was great yesterday. I've run out of superlatives. Jason, talk to me about Mr. Daniels.
Mike Daniels on third. Well, first of all, you know, the Green and Gold postgame show on KFan, Bill Michaels, Gary Ellerson used the term gam, grown-ass man. Mike Daniels is the king of the gams, and he was incredible yesterday. Mike Daniels on third down is a treat. And when I saw that he was in there on third down, I'm like, good. You know, you don't take your best player off the field. And that happened too often last year, and I think it hurt the defense. The pass rush coming from the defensive line in this type of a scheme, you know, if they start figuring out how to get pressure with their linebackers and then they start using this nitro package and they're able to kind of work some exotic blitzes in there and those types of things, the pressure on the passer is going to be there, and it's going to be very difficult to defend on a regular basis for opposing offenses. So Daniels had a game and a half, and I started out, and he got the first game ball on my piece, and I started out by saying, if Daniels gets a game ball, does anybody else really deserve one? He was just so head and shoulders above everyone else and making plays and just bullying guys and pushing them around. You know, a couple seasons ago, he said, how about if we be the bad guys for once? And I think he was trying to respond to what Seattle had established in terms of their reputation. He wanted to become the new Seahawks. And so against, ironically, against Seattle in a game where their defense played pretty well, Daniels stole the show. And I'm looking forward to seeing a lot more of 76 roaming around. But the other thing, too, is Mike Daniels is doing what you want your stars to do, which is make everybody better. And you look at a Kenny Clark, who didn't have a great statistical game, but he had that one pass knockdown. You know, those types of things are going to rub off. This defensive front is going to get pretty scary. I mean, opposing offenses are going to have to kind of pick their poison when he's on the field now, both from a standpoint of defending the run and also getting pressure on the passer. It was a great thing, just an incredible, incredible effort by Mike Daniels. You should be very proud to be wearing his jersey.
I am. And, you know, you're talking about how, you know, Kenny Clark doesn't have a great statistical game, but he played really well yesterday. And I say that because he and Daniels play essentially the same positions along that defensive line. It's hard for that player to tilt the field in their team's direction because of what their job descriptions are. And Daniels was the best player on the field yesterday. I can't express enough just how incredible that is because of where he plays. Let's go to the beginning of the game here because I really thought that the tone of that game was set on the first series where Nick Perry just eats the left tackle twice on back-to-back snaps and Devon House sniffs out a bubble screen and makes a nice tackle in his return to Green Bay. The Packers defense was juiced. They were charged up. And something I can tell you from the view that I had yesterday, I was up in the box yesterday. Their team speed on defense is so prevalent right now. It is clear they are so much faster than they were even just last season. Burnett playing inside linebacker helps that. Kentrell Bryce being on the field helps that. Healthy cornerbacks certainly helps that. But the Packers were able to fly around on the field. Their first drive of the game yesterday, Jason, didn't you feel like, okay, the big worry going into the season is always going to be the defense as long as Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback at least, because you just don't worry about that. But after that first series, you have to feel like, okay, we're in pretty good shape, right?
Defense looked great in that. I'm such a huge, huge advocate of that first drive. Start off on defense and three and out on that first drive. That's like my dream come true in any game. And the defense did not let me down. I mean, everything that I saw was a foreshadowing of how the day was going to go for the Packers defense in general. And it was great. They looked fantastic. The speed is there. The swarming to the ball, the getting to the ball carrier. You know, sure, they still got befuddled a little bit by the swing out pass and screens and things like that. But I didn't see the awful over the middle type things. I mean, there was in that last drive, that last Seattle drive, there was a little bit of that going on. So it's I don't know if that was Dom going back into that prevent or the Packers knowing that Seattle had to score twice and with that garbage offense they brought out on the field or whatever that is that was supposed to look like an offense for Seattle wasn't going to score twice. I think all of us knew that. But defense was fantastic. I mean, we talked about if this unit can be top half of the league this year, coupled with that offense, which will find its way, this Packers team is going to be special, can be very special. And, against a good quarterback in Russell Wilson who made some really good plays despite some of the pressure that Green Bay was bringing, I have to say it was very encouraging. They got off to a fantastic start and just they maintained it all day. And it was kind of like a flashback to 2015 where the defense had to kind of save the day a couple times during that season by holding the opposition out of the end zone because the offense wasn't scoring enough points and wasn't kind of upholding their end of the bargain. So this Packers defense is as long as they can stay healthy, that's our big caveat all season long. The sky's the limit.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. And another guy, Nick Perry was great yesterday too. Clay Matthews looked like his old self on a couple different occasions as well. The defense as a whole really just played really well. Cornerbacks were in position. Even some of the Seahawks' big plays down the field were just the corner was there, it's just a receiver made a play kind of thing. They had a couple of those as well. It was encouraging to see for sure. And I will, the other thing I'll say is, I said it on Twitter today, is I don't particularly care for Russell Wilson. I have my opinions on him. Not the player, certainly, but just him in general, I guess, is the way to put it. But I really respect him because of what he did yesterday and what he does all the time from the standpoint of this guy is under fire, under siege, under pressure, whatever way you want to put it, every single play, and he just doesn't flinch. He's a really good, really good quarterback. And, that Seahawks offense without him would just be an absolute tire fire because, like I said, I mean, he's under siege on every single play. So the defense also had a old friend, I guess, come to play against him yesterday, and that was Eddie Lacy. He was back in Green Bay playing for the Seattle Seahawks. Much was made of the Eddie Lacy revenge game. He discussed how, he might try a Lambeau leap if he were to score a touchdown, all those sorts of things. And it turned out that he would carry the ball 5 times and gain 3 yards on it. Some of that, obviously, due to the offensive line in front of him. But, again, only 5 carries. And running back Chris Carson found some holes. It was a dominating performance by the Packers against Eddie Lacy to where, I mean, anytime the runner has more carries than they have total yards, you got to feel good about that one. Jason, do you take any satisfaction in the fact that the only reason I take satisfaction is this is it's a fan thing about me. I totally acknowledge that. I hate it when opposing players jump into the stands at Lambeau and are able to do so. And that's where the satisfaction comes for me. I hold no ill will against Eddie Lacy for leaving the Packers, going to Seattle, anything like that. I just did not want to see him. I did not want to see him score a touchdown and then get a Lambeau leap in Green Bay. So there's my satisfaction. Jason, do you have any satisfaction in the Packers holding him down or out of the end zone?
The only satisfaction was just the success that it allowed the Packers to have and that Seattle's drive stalled. He's an opposing player, so from that standpoint, that's all that really mattered. I didn't have any added vitriol towards Lacy. I'm not bitter that he left Green Bay. I mean, the Packers obviously didn't want to bring him back, so he wants to work, and Seattle wanted his services, so he has every right to be there. And, hey, if it helped that Green Bay is very familiar with his running style and kind of had him pegged, which, I mean, as soon as Lacy got the ball, there was multiple Packers right on him. So whether that was the offensive line not doing its job or that was just Green Bay keying on him, maybe thinking that he was going to be the workhorse, and they kind of came in with a game plan. They said, listen, he's not beating us. I was very satisfied with the result, but not because I wanted to stick it to him. And we'll never know, fortunately. And hopefully we don't find out later this season when the Packers are hosting a playoff game against Seattle. But we'll never know if Lacy would have really jumped in the stands. I think that might have just been him kind of messing around and playing. I mean, his comments after the game, he still respects his old teammates. But he's a Seahawk now. So you put on one of the more hated jerseys in Packerland right now, you know, it doesn't matter what you did for the Packers in the past. At this point, you're just a guy across from the defense. You got to shut him down.
And shut him down they did. And we talked about the Nitro package, obviously. Everything seemed to click yesterday outside of, like I said, you know, you have the drive at the end of the half where McCarthy decides to use a couple timeouts. I'm convinced whoever told him that doesn't know how to do math because the Packers weren't going to get the ball back regardless unless they fumbled. And then that gifted Seattle 3 points. They gave Seattle 3 points off their touchdown drive. They stepped up and played really well in the red zone. There just wasn't a whole lot that the Seahawks were able to do offensively against a defense that, you know, admittedly was under siege, under a microscope. This is, you know, the Achilles heel of several Packers teams that people think could have been in the Super Bowl and haven't been because their defense has sucked. And yesterday they were really good. And now granted, the Seahawks may turn out to be a terrible offense. But for now, I mean, it's still Russell Wilson. And it's still a really good group of, you know, Doug Baldwin's a really good wide receiver. Jimmy Graham is still a really good tight end. And the Packers really held them to almost nothing. So I say, Jason, you know, I've been through this before, you know, where it looks like the Packers have a good defense. And then by the end of the year, that turns out to not be true. So I ask, you know, is this real or is this a mirage? You know, what do you think, what do you think's going on here? And this is, I mean, is it reason for optimism? Is it reason to pause? What are we looking at here with the defense?
Well, this is settle in because I was thinking about this all day today. And I'm going to say this right now. If you follow me on Twitter, you already saw me tweet this out. That play where HaHa Clinton Dix and Kevin King and, well, if it was Burnett, it was Burnett, all converge on the Seattle receiver whose name doesn't matter because he didn't catch the ball. He has the ball in his hands, but they hit him out of bounds, and it was one of those, like, you know, hit the guy in the air, and he goes flying out of bounds, and it's incomplete, and so that's a big play for the defense. That play right there is going to become big. It's going to be kind of like the poster play of this Packers defense this year. This defense is a thing. Injury is, I think, the only thing that can derail it, because they finally have, Jacob, you talked about the speed. That's been missing for so long. The Packers finally said, you know what, we're done getting beat. We're gonna put more speed on the field. You know, I remember back to 2010, and I was thinking about it today. There's so many parallels, and everyone rolls their eyes when you compare current team to former championship team. But for those who are into history repeating itself, in week one of 2010, you had Michael Vick came in for Kevin Cobb when Clay Matthews knocked Cobb out of the game. And Vick was running all over the place, and at one point was scrambling for a touchdown, and Nick Collins comes in like a missile and knocks Vick out of bounds, helicopter out of bounds before he gets to the end zone, and he doesn't score. And I kind of was reminded of that with these three guys and the play that they made yesterday. You know, kind of the same type of thing. Those both happened in week one. Green Bay was playing against an opponent that was a bird. You know, so if you want to draw any parallels there, I mean, there's definitely something to say about that. But this defense, I think there were too many things that went well yesterday that's how this defense is supposed to operate. That's what this scheme is supposed to be. You know, when Dom Capers was with the Steelers, and remember the Steelers 3-4 defense before the Packers started doing it, and you had, and even after, you know, in 2010 when they faced off against each other in the Super Bowl, and you had Lamar Woodley and James Harrison on either side, and both were really good. When you've got stud players at every level, then that is what this defense can do. I mean, it's very exciting because we all talk about the offense, and Aaron Rodgers, and it's going to be there, and they're going to do great things. And that's, you know, Rodgers is a transcendent, you know, legendary type player, but I absolutely buy in. I'm 100% bought into this defense because you're seeing guys like Morgan Burnett had a really nice pass breakup yesterday, just things that he hasn't always done during his time. And you know what? I think some of that has to do with confidence. These guys trust each other. I think there's a bond amongst the defense. Ricky Jean Francois after the game talking about, you know, Mike Daniels and just backing up his teammates. This is his first year in the league. I mean, some of these veterans that are coming in are excited to be in Green Bay because they finally have a chance to win. This team is tight. That shows, and I think that counts for something. That's one of the reasons why I say I'll buy in, because these guys are playing as a unit. They're playing together and they're playing as one. And as these rookies get better as the season wears on, it's only going to get better. So the only thing we need to worry about is health. Just cross your fingers this defense can stay healthy. If they can, we've only just started to see how special the things that can happen that they can produce.
Well, here's some of the good news, and something I wanted to bring up was, you know, this year the Ted Thompson offseason made it to where, you know, everybody's making a big deal about the fact that Kevin King only played 6 snaps yesterday. And the big reason that they're doing that is because T.J. Watt, the guy the Packers could have picked, former Wisconsin Badger, blah, 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 did wonderful in his debut. He had 2 sacks and an interception, and you know, there are some out there that are already saying, you know, Ted made a mistake and he should have drafted Watt, not King and Beagle, which is what that trade ultimately ended up being. For starters, that's asinine because they both have played 1 game, and T.J. Watt's career could end with 2 sacks and 1 interception in 7 years. And, you know, if that's the case, did Ted Thompson make a mistake? I don't know. I certainly don't anticipate that, because if you listen to anything I did this offseason, I love T.J. Watt. But I say that stuff to say that something that is nice about the way the Packers have built their team this year with their use of, you know, bargain veteran free agency, think about it this way. In the past, you know, the Packers' first-round pick, second-round pick, and maybe even their third-round pick, those guys are either starters or immediate contributors, and they have to be. Otherwise, the team's not going to be as good as they should be. Now, with Kevin King, for example, signing Devon House makes it to where you can play House, Randall, and Rollins if they're healthy, and King can be brought along slowly. Whereas if you didn't bring in Devon House, now Kevin King has to be a starter, and your depth pieces are Josh Hawkins and Ladarius Gunter and what turned out to be Lindsey Pipkins. Now you push everybody down a spot, and I think the Packers learned last year, being one ankle roll away from having to put just not as good players on the field is never a good thing. You know, Josh Jones, for example, Kentrell Bryce is there. Morgan Burnett is still here. Ha-ha Clinton Dix. They can bring him along slowly. And, you know, I still imagine these two guys that I just mentioned are going to get reps toward the playoffs, and they'll get better and, you know, add something to this defense at some point, I imagine. But they didn't have to force them into the lineup, and I think that's a positive development, that your rookies can develop and go through their growing pains, but they don't have to go through their growing pains while being a guaranteed starter like they had in the past. So, bravo, Ted Thompson, for putting some depth on this roster at really a lot of key positions that it just didn't have a season ago. So, you know, it remains to be seen how it'll all play out, but I'm interested in looking at the defense going forward. So I went through It's Real or Is It a Mirage, and that gets us to the point of this is a new segment that we have this year, and with us being called Pulse of the Pack, we call it the flatline moment of the game. It's very similar to Wayne Larrabee's There Is Your Dagger. It's actually the same exact thing when I say it's very similar, but with our kind of spin on it. So, Jason, when did you know the game was over yesterday? That is what the flatline moment means. So when were the Seahawks flatlined yesterday?
Well, you could say they were flatlined when their starting cornerback got thrown out of the game early on for forgetting that this is a football game, not a boxing match. Now, I had to bring this up because I didn't know if we were going to talk about it, and there's no way we're going to go through this whole show without addressing the fight, the next biggest thing since McGregor Mayweather. And, you know, Jeremy Lin didn't throw a punch in the sense that he cocked back and threw a fist at a face, but, you know, he dug the elbow and the arm into the face mask, and I don't recall if it was Cobb or Davante Adams. I thought it was Adams. And there's so much controversy and so much whining about the officiating yesterday. Most of it's coming from Seahawks fans, of course. But you can't do that. It's just stupid. And it just seems like every single time the Packers and Seahawks play, one of the Seahawks is getting thrown out of the game. It's usually K.J. Wright, who was the recipient of Martellus Bennett's shove and got planted flat on his back later in the game. So maybe that's a better choice for when you knew it was over, when Martellus Bennett was throwing Seattle defenders around after the play. But just unreal how every single time these two teams play, one of those guys manages to get thrown out of the game. It's just obviously a trend. But the real actual flatline moment of the game was the Crosby field goal, because, like I said, that Seattle offense wasn't scaring me at all. Russell Wilson made some great plays, but, you know, one great play every two or three series isn't going to get you in the end zone, and they never really threatened much. I mean, they had chances, but the Packers defense made it pretty obvious that if Seattle was going to score a touchdown, they were going to have to work and fight for it. And I'm looking at you, Jimmy Graham. So that's just the way the Packers decided to play. So you knew once they had to score twice, and Seattle had to score twice, and it was inside of 5 minutes, and it's in Green Bay, game over. There was no way that it was going to happen, and obviously that's the way it shook out, and no surprise there. So give it up to Mace for icing it with a late field goal.
Okay, so you got the field goal. Mine is, first of all, yeah, let me address the whining about the officials. First of all, Minnesota Vikings fans that have an inferiority complex that could never be satisfied. There is no league-wide conspiracy to get the Packers wins. And from a business standpoint, the Packers are the smallest market in the NFL. Getting them in the playoffs doesn't exactly help, whereas, say, a team like the Dallas Cowboys, like everybody will point to the Dez Bryant play as a reason the Packers get favoritism from the refs. The Cowboys are a better business draw for the NFC Championship than the Packers. Sorry, Packers fans, that is just true. And I've always been a proponent of, there's so many things that happen throughout a course of the game that you can control, and the officials are simply human. Control the things you can, and the things you can't control will not matter. And the reality of yesterday, if you're a Seahawks fan bitching about the officiating, or a Vikings fan who was a Seahawks fan for yesterday, because that's just how they are, there's so many things that the Seahawks could have controlled. They couldn't block Mike Daniels. They couldn't block Nick Perry. And by the end of the game, they couldn't stop the Packers' offense from getting first downs either. I'm sorry. There's so many things. You know, I'm not sitting here complaining about Devontae Adams getting run over on a play that should have been called pass interference, or the right tackle false starting twice on the team on the Seahawks' final drive. Why? Because that's just how the game works. You know, there's, if you lose the game because of a call by the official, you didn't deserve to win, because there's so many other things you can do. Anyways, moving on from that, my flatline moment of the game was Martellus Bennett's first down that allowed the Packers to kneel off the clock, because I know that Ryan Wood has kind of made a joke out of the onside kick thing from the 2014 NFC Championship game. And I know Joe Buck mentioned it in the broadcast yesterday that the Packers would need to make a catastrophic mistake, quote unquote. The reality of this is, against the Seahawks, I'm never comfortable. And it's because of that championship game. And I know that was a long time ago, and I know a lot of people that were in that game aren't either in Green Bay or Seattle anymore. It's just a reality. That game to me was not over until the Packers could kneel out the clock. And that's just how they are with Seahawks. So that is my flatline moment of the game. And that brings us to a segment you guys all know very well, and that is Adam Cech's Ticket King of the Game. Ticket King is our sponsor. They will be here all season long. Grab your tickets right down the street from the stadium and go in to cheer on the Packers against whatever team of your choosing. My Ticket King of the Game, I mentioned, it's Mike Daniels. I said it on Twitter yesterday. Big spoiler alert. The Ticket King of the Game is Mike Daniels. And I've gushed about him enough throughout this show. He was phenomenal yesterday. A 3-4 defensive lineman that is the best player on the field. That is hard to accomplish. Everything great about Mike Daniels yesterday. He is hands down Ticket King of the Game for me. Jason, who is your Ticket King of the Game?
Well, I'm going on the other side of the ball. My Ticket King of the Game is a guy who apparently, according to some, shouldn't even be on the team anymore, and that is Randall Cobb. It's kind of easy when you're the leading receiver on a pass-happy team and your quarterback threw the ball over 40 times and you won the game. They kind of go hand in hand. So I'm going with Randall Cobb, who was probably an unlikely hero out of all of the things that everybody expected to see in week one and wanted to see the light show between Rodgers and Martellus Bennett and thought Bennett was going to catch 3 or 4 touchdowns. It ended up being Randall Cobb that kept drives going and kept the ball moving. So easy choice this week. It'd be interesting to see what kind of season 18 has if everybody else can stay healthy and keep the defenses honest. I'm really excited about Cobb. Easy choice for me for my Ticket King.
Let's move around the league very briefly. Jason, was there any game or any team this week that surprised you, whether in the division or otherwise?
I don't know about surprise. I was surprised the Bears were so close to Atlanta. I don't know if that's just the Bears playing hard in a season opener. They always seem to get to open at home. You know, I think about the Packers having to go on the road 3 years in a row. And the Bears almost beat the defending NFC champions and really who should have been the defending Super Bowl champions in week one, and was Chicago's own fault they didn't win. So that was probably my biggest surprise. And obviously, as a fan of the team that's going to be facing the Falcons next week, it's a little comforting to know that if the Bears can stick with those guys, albeit on grass and on the road outside, that Green Bay might have much more of a fighting chance than, you know, we already think that they have next week.
They may. You know, my biggest surprise is the New England Patriots getting thumped on opening night. They lost by 2 possessions. Alex Smith is throwing the ball all over the field. Kareem Hunt, a star, is born. Tyreek Hill with a big touchdown reception. That was just – the whole game I'm sitting there and just thinking like, okay, the Patriots are going to make a play here that changes the tide and either puts them ahead for good or, you know, allows them to win this game. And that never – it just never came. Tom Brady looked like he was 40. And the Patriots, you know, I kind of compared it to the 2015 Packers where, you know, Rodgers would escape the pocket and he would look for Jordy Nelson because he trusts him and he knows his mind is just synced with his and he wasn't there because he had torn his ACL. Julian Edelman is very similar in New England to Tom Brady from the standpoint of he is right there with Brady on everything. They see the same things. They have the same eyes, the same mind, whatever way you want to look at it. But he wasn't there. The Patriots offense, they scored enough points, but their defense was awful. And I certainly don't think that'll be a trend. You know, I mean, everybody's going to talk all week about how the Patriots, you know, their demise and all this other, and Tom Brady's done and yada, yada. And then they'll go out and beat the Saints by 40 points on Sunday. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but it could. But that was surprising, to say the very least, just watching the Patriots get smoked. And, yeah, the Bears hanging in with the Falcons, and they really – they had a first and goal at like the 9-yard line or something like that yesterday and a chance to win the game. They had two drop passes that could have won each of them. Well, each one of them could have won that game. The Falcons, you know, they had an 88-yard touchdown on a miscommunication. Their offense wasn't as crisp yesterday. But, Jason, as you mentioned, they will be on that fast track. They will be on turf next week when they play the Green Bay Packers, and that is where the Packers head next after starting 1-0. They'll play the Atlanta Falcons. It is a Sunday night kickoff, so 7:30 on NBC. You get Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, and you get the spotlight. You'll be waiting all day for Sunday night, you know, as the, I guess the old song goes. They don't sing it. Carrie Underwood doesn't sing it that way anymore. But I want to talk about this one, Jason. It's in Atlanta, and offensively, you know, last year we built the NFC Championship game as a track meet shootout, and the Packers missed a field goal, and then they fumbled, and they just had a lot of things go wrong early, and then it just snowballed, and they didn't score their points until the game was well in hand. So, you know, what is the matchup on offense that the Packers have to win? And for me, I still think this is a game you're going to have to score points on, and the wide receivers are going to have to win their matchups against the Falcons' defensive backs. Now, Desmond Trufant is very good. Robert Alford is a good player. They have a fast secondary. The Packers need to find a way to stay in rhythm because 17 points is not going to win this game. I think they'll be able to run a little bit against the Falcons. Yesterday, Tariq Cohen had a really good game in his first game as a Chicago Bear against them. Devontae Freeman had a good game as well. I think the Packers should be able to run the ball a little bit against them. But the reality is this is a passing league, and you can either, in the words of Corey Behnke, you know, you can either run the ball or you can win the game. And the Packers are going to have to throw the ball to win the game, and then they'll have to run the ball to run out the clock eventually. So we'll see what happens here. But I like, you know, the receivers against the D-backs, you got to find spaces and openings because the Packers have to get those chunk plays that were kind of missing yesterday. But the Falcons defense, certainly not as good as Seattle's defense. So, Jason, what do you feel? What's the matchup here on offense they have to win?
Okay, so yesterday we saw Aaron Rodgers kind of not really settling in, didn't look real comfortable back there when he was passing. And I don't know if that had more to do with maybe wanting to trust and feel comfortable with Kyle Murphy as Everson Griffin just sacked Drew Brees as we're recording this. The Monday night game is on between the Saints and the Vikings. Irony. And Rodgers wanted to be comfortable that he had the protection, he was going to have time to throw. And obviously one of the things that Rodgers needs is that comfortability to get into that rhythm. When he's comfortable, he's going to pick apart any defense, and he's going to have confidence, he's going to make the throws, and he's going to do what it is that he does, which is play amazing football. So the key is the offensive line. The offensive line's got to establish protection early and keep the heat off of Aaron Rodgers. If Rodgers goes out there the first two series, they can put together a couple of nice drives. He's not under a lot of heat or having to scramble a bunch, and they're able to run the offense the way they want to, which is not at all what they did against Seattle. I think Green Bay's got a fantastic chance to win this game. So it's all about the O-line. I don't know what the scoop is with Bulaga. if he's going to come back this week. After what I saw from Kyle Murphy against Seattle, if they want to give Bulaga an extra week, I know it's the Falcons. I know it's at home, and they really want to win this game. It would be huge for them to do so, knock off two of their toughest competitors en route to the NFC title this year. You want to put your best players out there, but those guys up front are going to be the key. Keep 12 comfortable. If he comes out comfortable and he gets confident indoors, we've already seen what he can do in Atlanta in the past, and I know we're digging way back into the crates, back into 2010, you know, divisional round of the playoffs, but he can do great things when he's inside, not having to worry about the weather, and that's Green Bay's best case scenario. So, got to protect 12.
Let's move to the defense then, because the reality here also is the Packers are going to have to. They didn't even get in the way of the Falcons last year in the championship game. The Falcons scored however and whenever they wanted to against the Packers defense. That really was just hapless by that point in the year. They had no chance against those guys. So here's my thing. It's the same key that they had, I thought, going into yesterday, is you got to rush the passer. You have to get Matt Ryan off his spot. For what I was able to see from the Bears game yesterday is the Bears have a good pass rush, and they were able to move Matt Ryan and harass him enough. They just had a blown coverage. Outside of a blown coverage on an 80-plus yard touchdown, you know, they held the Falcons to 16 points if you take that away. And I think a lot of that has to do with their front seven. Now, we'll see what happens here, but this is a better offensive line than what Packers saw against the Seahawks. This is a better quarterback, in my opinion, and a better group of offensive weapons, receivers. Julio Jones exists, and the Packers will hear from him in this game. Devontae Freeman is a better running back than any guy the Seahawks threw out there yesterday. I still think it all starts with you've got to get Matt Ryan off his spot. So Nick Perry, Clay Matthews, Mike Daniels. We'll see if Ahmad Brooks is able to come back from a concussion in time for this week. Kyler Fackrell, Chris Odom, maybe, possibly. You got to get Matt off of his spot, because when he's able to sit in the pocket, he was the league MVP last year, and that I don't think is an absolute mirage. The Falcons have a good offense, and it's better on that turf. So that's what I think as far as the big matchup there. They got to get after the quarterback, either get him uncomfortable or get him on the ground. Jason, how do you feel about the defense?
We're on the exact same page. I'm gonna be redundant and boring here, but it's all about the pass rush. I can't get the image of Clay Matthews just barely missing Matt Ryan in the playoffs last year. And by that time, I think the game was already kind of going in the wrong direction. But they got to get to Matt Ryan. He's had two games where he wasn't under anywhere near enough pressure. You get him under pressure, he starts getting jittery back there, and he'll start to take some chances. And against this secondary, that's going to be a huge mistake. I'm looking for the first interception of the year. I'm looking for Ha-Ha Clinton Dix to make a huge pick and get in the end zone. So will it be this week? It will if you get Matt Ryan off of his spot. So the Atlanta front, like you said, is a lot better than what the Packers saw in Seattle. They're going to have their work cut out for them. But Atlanta should also take note. You know, the defense up front for the Packers is not just about the outside linebackers, and they may be without Ahmad Brooks if he doesn't clear the concussion protocol this week. He only played six snaps, so he got hurt early in that game and went out. So they could be without one of their key guys out there that I think they'd like to have more ingrained in the defense. But they get that pressure with Mike Daniels going on, and you start getting that pressure up the middle. And you know, if you got Devontae Freeman, if they can double up, rush the passer, and also stop the run, it can create a lot of problems, because I think if they scheme right and they stay in their lane, they be in the Packers secondary. I think they can maybe, you know, you can't stop 11. You can only hope to contain him, but I think they can. But that rush is going to be the biggest key. So we're both on the same page on that one there.
Prediction time. At the beginning of the year when we did our season kickoff show, I had this game pegged as a loss. I said I thought the game was going to be close, and I still feel that way, but I mean, I don't, you know, the things that happen in week one, I don't take a lot of those things, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I kind of pause when it comes to anything. I don't try to draw a lot of conclusions from week one. So, you know, I don't think the Packers are going to play as well on defense as they did yesterday, and that's partly a product of them playing a better offense. I don't think that the Falcons are going to be as bad as they were yesterday. I think they're on turf. I think they're opening that new stadium, which I think is an impossible situation. I mentioned that last week as well. I like the Falcons in this game 31-27, kind of a heartbreaker like the regular season game was just last season in the Georgia Dome. But I still like Atlanta to win this game. Jason, how you feeling?
Yeah, I think it's just the deck is stacked against the Packers. The second year in a row in week two, they're having to travel to a tough road opponent, open a new stadium. I hope there's no other stadiums that are scheduled to open next season that the Packers have on the schedule, because they're going to get picked to open the stadium again for the third year in a row. And, you know, it's not impossible. They certainly can overcome it. You know, the Packers have won in Atlanta before, and I don't think the Falcons are this big juggernaut. I predicted they'd take a step backwards this year. But, you know, I think Green Bay overall is the better team, but the scenario, I think, just kind of favors Atlanta a little bit more. And who knows if the Falcons are going to find some motivation to try to play for the city of Atlanta, who has been dealing with Tropical Storm Irma now. It's downgraded and it's gone through Florida, and so it's not nearly as strong, but it's still causing some problems in Atlanta. So all those things thrown together, they don't really add up for me, and the Packers, unfortunately, are not going to go undefeated this season. So this seems like a game that, you know, it's never okay to lose, but this seems like a game that they can drop, and it's going to be a little more understandable than, say, against the Bears at home, or if they lose to the Cincinnati Bengals, who couldn't even muster up a point in week one, while we're talking about surprises from week one. So I've got Atlanta winning this one. However it happens, I'm not sure, but I think Green Bay keeps it tight and they're holding a really slim lead, but I've got Falcons 27-21 in the end. Packers walk out hanging there with their head held. I shouldn't say not hanging their head, with their heads held up high, even though it's a loss. There's no such thing as a good loss, but good Falcons team, but heading into week three and motivated to come out and kick some butt.
So we both like the Falcons next week. That brings us to our final segment, and this is new as well. It's called our parting shots. Those of you that watch Jerry Springer, which I hope there's like none of you, but it's very similar to their, you know, his final thought. And this week, usually every week, how we're going to do it is one of us will get the floor for a few minutes and just speak about something that's on our mind. It can be football, you know, or otherwise. But this week I feel with the day that this show is on, and today is September the 11th, I only feel it's appropriate that both of us get to speak, because really there's a generational gap here, sort of, between Jason and I. So we'll have different stories, different perspectives about what exactly happened. You know, this is the moment my parents, or as people slightly older than my parents, you know, their thing was, where were you when Kennedy was shot? You know, this is our, where were you when? And it was 9/11. So, Jason, I'll let you start. You know, where, to quote Alan Jackson, where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day?
Well, I was out in California, so I was as far away on the mainland and in time zone from New York as possible. It was a three-hour time difference. So by the time I woke up, the first tower had already been hit, and the second tower was either had just been hit or was very shortly after I woke up. But the very I woke up to an alarm radio at that time, and the very first words I heard were the radio DJ saying, "This is the worst attack on American U.S. soil, you know, in the history of our country." And I didn't know what the details were, but I ran into the living room and turned on the TV, and I had to go to work that day. So I was getting ready for work and just watching all this happen, and by that time they'd already determined that it wasn't just an accident, that this was an intentional act against the United States, and we as a country were going to war. So I was kind of a couple years out of college and still new in my career, and I worked in the hospitality industry. I still do to this day, and that was an industry that was very greatly impacted by the events of 9/11. So there was a lot that affected me personally, even though I wasn't in New York and I didn't have any family out there, but just watching everything unfold. And then, you know, we saw some of the horrific things that went down. You know, I mentioned earlier in the show, Ari Fleischer's Twitter timeline today. And it really is an interesting glimpse back into what happened that day and how chaotic things got. as multiple people in very important positions within this country, both military, civilian, and government, had to make some very critical decisions on the fly and against the grain and not always in agreement. And President Bush at the time was very adamant about wanting to come back to Washington, D.C., and his advisors and those that are with him that day had to do everything they could to keep him away from harm's way. There was just so much chaos going on, and with them not knowing where all of this was coming from at first and wondering, you know, who's doing this? Is this an inside job? There's a bunch of theories. I mean, there's so many years since this happened that so many theories have come out. There's conspiracy theorists who think it was an inside job. There's all kinds of crazy things that we've heard. Regardless of what side of the fence you're on, I think we can all agree it was a tragic day. There were a lot of American lives lost. So that's not lost on me on a day like today. While we're here to talk about football and it's a Packers show, on this particular day, I think it's okay for us to pause and remember, like we do every year, the sacrifices of those who tried to help those who were in danger, those who lost their lives, the family who are now without sons, brothers, uncles, fathers. Those are the things that really matter. And so I think it was important for us to do this and a kind of a good way to end it. You know, I remember from a Packers perspective, they were scheduled to be in New York later that week. This happened on a Tuesday, and the Packers were supposed to play the Giants, and that game got moved to the end of the season, a game that the Packers won, and that happened to be the game that Michael Strahan, quote-unquote, sacked Brett Favre to break the single-season record. So just some Packers history there, you know, in that particular season. But we never forget is something that, you know, as much as it gets thrown out there, I'm a huge believer in. There was a lot to remember, and I think there was a lot of good that came out of what we did as a country and what those first responders did, and I think that's what I'll focus on and just try to honor the memory of those that we lost.
Yeah, and you know, my story is a little different. I was in fourth grade when that happened, and I remember I had just asked my teacher. Back in those days, we had these like daily lunch tickets that you could purchase for $2. And I went to the office to try and purchase one. And so when I went to the office, I bought my lunch ticket like business as usual. You know, I paid my $2.10, and I'll never forget that total because of this. I paid my $2.10, and I came back and I see like students, tears in their eyes, like fear, all kinds of stuff. Different emotions. And, you know, my teacher, who was Mrs. Ma at the time, was telling the rest of us, I should say, that, you know, the country was under attack and that we were probably going to go to war and that things were changing and just all kinds of different stuff. And I remember this sense of like fear and anger and really not understanding like, why this was happening, how this was happening, you know, all those different things. And I remember going home and just, you know, obviously I watched movies and I watched, you know, stuff of things blowing up or whatever by that time. But I'd never seen it actually happen. And it was strange watching the news and just feeling like this is real. And you know, most fourth graders at that point are probably just hoping that their parents can stop watching the news so that, you know, we can get to watching cartoons or, you know, whatever it was that I wanted to watch at that time. And I wasn't that way. My eyes were glued to the TV screen because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And it was sobering. I still think about it now. I've been to Ground Zero since that time. I went as an eighth grader, I was going into eighth grade at the time. So 4 years later, I went and I saw, and you know, the one thing I told my friends was, you know, it's the biggest hole I have ever seen. It's just a big gap where this big building used to be. It's not there anymore. It's a reminder, you know, something else I remember from those days, and I'm reminded every time I see the picture that I took from that day, is that, you know, that day I remember, you know, it didn't matter whether you were black, green, blue, purple, orange, you know, multicolored, it didn't matter who you were, where you were from. That day we were all red, white, and blue. and there was a sense of pride and just protecting each other and, you know, just wondering if everything's going to be okay kind of thing. And it was, Jason, you're right. You know, I remember, like, football got canceled that week and the Packers didn't play the Giants. They moved that game to the end of the season. Baseball got canceled for weeks on end. And I, you know, there's looks of President Bush throwing out the first pitch in the World Series that year. I believe he threw it out the first game back in New York as well. But I remember the World Series that year because it was the Yankees and the Diamondbacks. And it's one of the best World Series of my lifetime, even though it didn't end quite the way I would want it to. You know, just the sense of pride and everything that came with that. It was, it's crazy. You know, just to think that that was, you know, now that was 16 years ago. And that's, it seems like a long time, but it's really not. Cause you know, Jason, you and I can hear it in your voice. I can feel it in mine. We remember everything, from that day. And, you know, I take this time here, I guess I want to thank, you know, first responders, firemen, policemen, anybody that helped on that day, anybody that helps every day, you know, those are things that can happen to those people at a moment's notice. You know, that can happen at any point. And, you know, those guys, they have no choice. They have to go. Because I was thinking, like, me being the person I am, like, hell yeah, I would be scared. Like, I don't want to go into this burning building that is a million stories high and you've got people, you know, jumping out just so they don't burn to death. They'd rather jump and hit the ground and die that way than being burned alive. And these people, they had no choice. They went in because that was their duty. That was what they were supposed to do. Those guys are heroes. Now, those guys are the ones that deserve the publicity and the praise. So that's how I feel here on the 16th anniversary of that. You know, I'll never forget it. Jason, I, you know, you said you'll never forget it. There's so many people that it's just – that, you know, like I said, it's that day in our lifetime. You know, where were you when Kennedy was shot for the previous generation? You know, for us, it's where were you when the towers were hit? And I'll never forget it. Any final thoughts, Jason, before before we sign off here?
It's tough to follow up, but I think in getting back into the spirit of moving on, you know, we're past these two big storms, and these have caused a lot of devastation and damage in our country. But if we think back to all of the ways that we've responded, we as a country, you know, U.S. citizens and everyone around the world, you know, we're all still here. Most of us are still here. And I'm not trying to forget those that have been lost in these situations, but there is a strength to be gained from it all. So, you know, we survived these storms. There is damage. There's going to be a lot of work to be done, but Houston will rebuild. South Florida and Atlanta and the Southeast U.S. will rebuild, and everything will come back hopefully stronger than it was before. It's tough to take down this country, and in the last 16 years, there have been a lot of things between war and natural events that have tested us. So, you know, that's something that as football fans, I think we can all appreciate, because one of the things we always look to in a football team is how they handle adversity and how they persevere. And, you know, we've talked about this tough game coming up. The Packers are going to have to persevere. Another tough situation where they're opening a stadium, but this is a big opportunity in front of them. They get a win in this game, and I'm not trying to blow past the 9/11 thing, but, you know, it's a Packers show. If they get a win in this game, they're 2-0 when I think all of us picked them to be 1-1, and they've got the brightest future in front of them, and they've also got two big tie-breaking wins against teams that could be in the hunt for home field advantage. So Aaron Rodgers wants to play the NFC Championship game at home. The best time to start a big push towards that effort would be this Sunday with a great performance and a big win.
That it would. And, you know, that's a big thing this weekend. I imagine, you know, two tiebreak, you know, there was talk of the Packers had a good chance to start 0-2 because of the teams that they played. And now you start 2-0, you got to feel good about your chances going down the stretch here, into the rest of their season, considering, you know, that's their two toughest games, you can argue, were those, unless, you know, at Dallas, in Minnesota, maybe something like that. But, yeah, a lot going there. That's going to do it, though, for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. That is at Packer Pulse. You can follow me personally. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. Packers get a big win over the Seahawks to open their season. Next week, they play the Atlanta Falcons. Jason and I both like the Falcons in that matchup. Hopefully, we are eating crow by that point. I want to thank you guys. I want to thank our sponsors, Ticket King, and listen every week for our Ticket King of the Game. You know, grab your tickets. It's right down the street from the stadium. I'm going to do it in November. Grab your tickets, go in, make some noise, and cheer on the Packers. Everybody, I want to thank you once again for listening to this show every week, because as I've said, you know, we wouldn't do this show without the listeners and everybody paying attention. So thank you guys, as always, for the first Victory Monday edition of Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.